K-1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Anna Mateo, and Jill Robbins. Alice Bryant answers a question from a learner in this week's Ask a Teacher. We close with an American story. This week, it is Luck by Mark Twain. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Britain's Prince Harry and his wife Meghan were pictured on the cover of Time magazine's yearly 100 Most Influential People in the World issue. The list also includes singers Billie Eilish and Britney Spears and gymnast Simone Biles. Harry and Meghan left their royal duties last year and moved to California from London. They launched the nonprofit Archwell Foundation and made agreements to produce TV shows. They are shown on one of seven covers showing the most influential people. The photo shows the Duke and Duchess of Sussex dressed casually. Chef Jose Andres has partnered with the Archwell Foundation. He runs the nonprofit World Kitchen. He wrote in the publication that it would have been safer for Harry and Meghan to stay silent. That's not what Harry and Meghan do or who they are. In a world where everyone has an opinion about people they don't know, the Duke and Duchess have compassion for the people they don't know, Andres wrote. Time magazine editor-in-chief Edward Felsenthal said the 100 list names leaders from around the world working to build a better future. The list includes 54 women and politicians, such as U.S. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. It also includes former President Donald Trump. Britney Spears made the list for the first time. She has struggled to be removed from a court-ordered guardianship agreement or conservatorship that controlled her life and business for 13 years. Seven-time Grammy winner Billie Eilish also was shown on one of the covers. She was introduced by rap music star Megan Thee Stallion, who wrote that Eilish stands up for herself and for women everywhere. I'm Brian Lynn.
Most of the largest public universities in the United States do not have a mandate or official order that students be vaccinated against COVID-19. Some schools say they require vaccines, but permit some students to refuse it. Others have refused entry to those who are not vaccinated. The new school year is beginning as the Delta variant continues to spread in many parts of the country. University officials and teachers believe high vaccination rates are the way to return to normal school life. In some cities and states, leaders have made it illegal for schools to have vaccine mandates. In such places, schools are using unusual ways to get more students vaccinated. Research by the Associated Press shows that 26 of the nation's 50 largest public universities are not requiring vaccination. That means about 55% of public university students can make a choice. Universities with vaccine mandates are mostly in the northeastern U.S. and California. Almost all of the universities without mandates are in states that have made such requirements illegal, including Florida, Texas, and Arizona. Here is a look at three public universities and what they are doing to urge more students to get vaccinated. At the University of Connecticut, students are required to be vaccinated. But the school has permitted 800 exemptions or exceptions to the requirement. It has not denied a single request for an exemption. University officials are working with students who have not been vaccinated to understand the reason for their decision, said Dr. Andrew Aguinobi. He is the university's interim president. He is also a pediatrician, a doctor whose expertise is treating children. About 90% of classes at the university are expected to be in person this term. All students must wear face coverings indoors. Those who remain unvaccinated must receive weekly COVID-19 testing. University officials say 97% of their students are vaccinated. They say only 10 COVID-19 infections have been recorded since the school year began. An executive order from Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has made vaccine mandates in schools illegal. So the University of Central Florida is doing some unusual things to get students vaccinated. It is giving out prizes. Many professors are concerned for their safety because they don't know which students are vaccinated, said Joseph Harrington. He is a physics professor and head of the Teachers Association. He is also part of a group of teachers asking the governor to let schools set their own policies. There are some large classes where students are sitting in the aisles because they're afraid to sit next to other students, Harrington said. In the first week of classes, research showed 72.6% of those questioned had at least one vaccine dose. University spokesman Chad Bennett said. He said the school is giving out prizes such as free books, computers, and tuition money. Students at the University of Virginia who do not get vaccinated cannot attend classes unless they receive a religious or medical exemption. At the start of the school year, 193 students were unenrolled for the term because they were not vaccinated, said Dr. Christopher Holstiga. He is the director of Student Health and Wellness. He said the policy is the same as with vaccinations for other diseases, such as measles. About 97% of the school's 25,000 students and 92% of staff members were vaccinated, officials said. So far, the school has reported 255 COVID-19 cases among students. It is offering more than 90% of classes in person. I'm Jill Robbins.
Even with an injured leg, a tall gray-crowned crane struts through a bird shelter in the Rwandan capital, Kigali. The shelter, called Umusambi Village, has rescued more than 200 cranes from captivity. In just 4 years, the organization has helped to increase the population of these endangered birds from 487 to 881. Before this work began, local communities were hunting or capturing the birds to sell, said veterinarian Olivier Singomana. Singomana recently explained to the Reuters news agency why this was possibly happening. In Rwanda, the bird is often a symbol of high social status and wealth. So they are often kept as pets in private homes or hotels. Many people really love cranes, but some people wanted to have them in their gardens. So there was huge demand for the illegal pet trade, Singomana added. In fact, 6 years ago, he said there were more cranes living in captivity in hotels and homes than in the wild. Singomana added that poverty and a lack of awareness in the local communities led them to capture and sell the birds illegally. He said raising awareness of their endangered status is helping to protect the birds. Cranes are beautiful birds. The gray-crowned crane is covered with gray and white feathers. Their heads are crowned by thin yellow feathers. They have black and red features at the throat. For Singomana, his own love of the bird goes back to his childhood. He grew up in a village filled with gray-crowned cranes. They not only woke up people in the morning, but they also provided entertainment. People really enjoyed their dance, their call. It is just one species that means a lot in the society, in the culture, he said. Singomana founded the Umusambi village in 2015 and runs it together with the government. Umusambi means gray-crowned bird in the Kinyarwanda language. Some of the rescued birds are brought to the village after being injured by illegal hunters. Others come from homes where their captors broke their legs or cut their wings to prevent them from flying away. At Umusambi village, the cranes are able to heal. When they are healthy enough to survive in their natural environment, Singomana releases them in a protected forest. I'm Ana Mateo.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Sajjad in Iran. He asks, "Hello, could you possibly tell me which one is correct? I travel by train or I travel with train? And is there any article about this? I couldn't find one anywhere." Hello, Sajjad. When we talk about means of transport, the prepositions we use depend on whether we are speaking generally or specifically. When you are talking about general ways to travel, use the preposition by. For example, you can travel by train, by car, by bus, by truck, by plane, by motorcycle, by helicopter, or by boat. When you say, "I travel by train," it means you usually or always take the train as your means of transport. A more common verb when speaking of transport is go. For example, you can say, I go by train. There is one exception to using the preposition by. When speaking generally about walking as your means of transport, use on. It is more common to say, I travel on foot, for example, than I travel by foot. But note that we do not use with for any means of transport. Now let's discuss specifics. When you are talking about a specific instance of taking or using transport, use on or in. For trains, buses, boats, and planes, use on. You might say, for example, I'm on the plane now. I have to turn off my phone. For trucks, cars, and helicopters, use in. You can say, I'm in a taxi, for example. A simple way to remember whether to use on or in is this. If you can stand up or walk inside the vehicle, use on. If you can only sit in the vehicle, use in. You cannot stand inside of a car, for example. Here is another way to remember. For private transport, such as cars and trucks, use in. For public transport, such as trains, buses, and planes, use on. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Alice Bryant.
Our story today is called Luck. It was written by Mark Twain. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
I was at a dinner in London, given in honor of one of the most celebrated English military men of his time. I do not want to tell you his real name and titles. I will just call him Lieutenant General Lord Arthur Scoresby. I cannot describe my excitement when I saw this great and famous man. There he sat, the man himself, in person, all covered with medals. I could not take my eyes off him. He seemed to show the true mark of greatness. His fame had no effect on him. The hundreds of eyes watching him, the worship of so many people, did not seem to make any difference to him. Next to me sat a clergyman, who was an old friend of mine. He was not always a clergyman. During the first half of his life, he was a teacher in the military school at Woolwich. There was a strange look in his eye as he leaned toward me and whispered, "Privately, he is a complete fool." He meant, of course, the hero of our dinner. This came as a shock to me. I looked hard at my friend. I could not have been more surprised if he had said the same thing about Napoleon, or Socrates, or Solomon. But I was sure of two things about the clergyman. He always spoke the truth, and his judgment of men was good. Therefore, I wanted to find out more about our hero as soon as I could. Some days later, I got a chance to talk with the clergyman, and he told me more. These are his exact words. "About 40 years ago, I was an instructor in the military academy at Woolwich when young Scoresby was given his first examination. I felt extremely sorry for him. Everybody answered the questions, well, intelligently, while he, why, dear me, he did not know anything, so to speak. He was a nice, pleasant young man. It was painful to see him stand there and give answers that were miracles of stupidity. I knew, of course, that when examined again, he would fail and be thrown out. So, I said to myself, it would be a simple, harmless act to help him as much as I could. I took him aside and found he knew a little about Julius Caesar's history, but he did not know anything else. So I went to work and tested him and worked him like a slave. I made him work over and over again on a few questions about Caesar, which I knew he would be asked. If you will believe me, he came through very well on the day of the examination. He got high praise, too, while others, who knew 1,000 times more than he, were sharply criticized. By some strange, lucky accident, he was asked no questions but those I made him study. Such an accident does not happen more than once in 100 years. Well, all through his studies, I stood by him with the feeling a mother has for a disabled child. And he always saved himself by some miracle. I thought that what in the end would destroy him would be the mathematics examination. I decided to make his end as painless as possible. So I pushed facts into his stupid head for hours. Finally, I let him go to the examination to experience what I was sure would be his dismissal from school. Well, sir, try to imagine the result. I was shocked out of my mind. He took first prize, and he got the highest praise. I felt guilty day and night. What I was doing was not right, but I only wanted to make his dismissal a little less painful for him. I never dreamed it would lead to such strange, laughable results. I thought that sooner or later, one thing was sure to happen. The first real test, once he was through school, would ruin him. Then the Crimean War broke out. I felt that sad for him that there had to be a war. Peace would have given this donkey a chance to escape from ever being found out as being so stupid. Nervously, I waited for the worst to happen. It did. He was appointed an officer, a captain of all things. Who could have dreamed that they would place such a responsibility on such weak shoulders as his? I said to myself that I was responsible to the country for this. I must go with him and protect the nation against him as far as I could. So I joined up with him, and away we went to the field. And there, oh dear, it was terrible. Mistakes, fearful mistakes. Why, he never did anything that was right. Nothing but mistakes. But you see, nobody knew the secret of how stupid he really was. Everybody misunderstood his actions. They saw his stupid mistakes as works of great intelligence. They did, honestly. His smallest mistakes made a man in his right mind cry and shout and scream, too, to himself, of course. and what kept me in a continual fear was the fact that every mistake he made increased his glory and fame. I kept saying to myself that when at last they find out about him, it will be like the sun falling out of the sky. He continued to climb up over the dead bodies of his superiors. Then, in the hottest moment of one battle, down went our colonel. My heart jumped into my mouth, for Scoresby was the next in line to take his place. "Now we are in for it," I said. The battle grew hotter. The English and their allies were steadily retreating all over the field. Our regiment occupied a position that was extremely important. One mistake now would bring total disaster. And what did Scoresby do this time? He just mistook his left hand for his right hand, that was all. An order came for him to fall back and support our right. Instead, he moved forward and went over the hill to the left. We were over the hill before this insane movement could be discovered and stopped. And what did we find? A large and unsuspected Russian army waiting. And what happened? Were we all killed? That is exactly what would have happened in 99 cases out of 100. But no, those surprised Russians thought that no one regiment by itself would come around there at such a time. It must be the whole British army, they thought. They turned tail. Away they went over the hill and down into the field in wild disorder, and we after them. In no time there was the greatest turnaround you ever saw. The Allies turned defeat into a sweeping and shining victory. The Allied commander looked on, his head spinning with wonder, surprise, and joy. He sent right off for Scoresby and put his arms around him and hugged him on the field in front of all the armies. Scoresby became famous that day as a great military leader, honored throughout the world. That honor will never disappear while history books last. He is just as nice and pleasant as ever. But he still does not know enough to come in out of the rain. He is the stupidest man in the universe. Until now, nobody knew it but Scoresby and myself. He has been followed day by day, year by year, by a strange luck. He has been a shining soldier in all our wars for years. He has filled his whole military life with mistakes. Every one of them brought him another honorary title. Look at his chest, flooded with British and foreign medals. Well, sir, every one of them is the record of some great stupidity or other. They are proof that the best thing that can happen to a man is to be born lucky. I say again, as I did at the dinner, Scoresby's a complete fool.
And that's our program for today.
Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley.